Trendstorm.
Welcome to Radio Sputnik and Trendstorm. My name is Andrew Kripko, and I'm going to give you a forward-focused analysis of things to come and the general trends behind them. Here's what we have for you today. South Africa, land seizures or economic justice? South Africa began implementing its controversial policy to nationalize large-scale white-owned farms, which critics claim is a land seizure, while supporters see it as economic justice. India and Pakistan, from rivalry to rapprochement? Longtime rivals India and Pakistan seem poised to experiment with another rapprochement after their leaders send positive messages to one another, welcoming this possibility. And also, Syria, spheres of reconstruction. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov dropped a bombshell when he revealed that the UN was dissuading countries from reconstructing Syria, which coincided with the Saudis partially replacing some of America's pulled funding for this initiative in the country's northeast. Opening up this edition of Trendstorm are the land appropriations in South Africa. South Africa began implementing its controversial policy to appropriate large-scale white-owned farms, which critics claim is a land seizure, while supporters see it as economic justice. President Cyril Ramaphosa announced his intent to go forward with this move earlier this year, which was originally proposed by Julius Malema of the Economic Freedom Fighters Radical Opposition Party. And the state just started to take property from white owners without compensation in the cases where negotiations between the two parties failed. This was in response to two game farmers in Limpopo province refusing to part with their land after the government only offered them 10% of the value that they were asking for. It also comes after South African media circulated what they claimed was a leaked list of the 195 farms on the expropriation list, which reportedly caused some of these landowners to panic and unsuccessfully try to sell their property. The issue of land reform has long been a very contentious one in post-apartheid South Africa, because the white minority still owns the vast majority of the country's farmland, which they assert has rightfully been theirs for generations, while their opponents believe that it was acquired as part of a racist, colonial-era land grab that needs to be reversed as soon as possible. Something similar happened in neighboring Zimbabwe at the turn of the century, but it disastrously contributed to that nation's economic collapse and attracted strong international condemnation from the West, with the new government of President Mnangagwa actually trying to entice these same farmers to return. South Africa's white farmers warn that their country is about to make a similar mistake, but that their stakes are much higher in this economically dynamic nation of 55 million than the smaller one to the north that's nearly a third of the size and has a stagnant economy. The farmers also fear for their lives because they believe that they've been targeted for decades by criminals and that the government is now complicit in committing crimes against them on a national level. So scared are some of these individuals that a few of them have visited Russia and discussed relocating there en masse in the event that the state went forward with its land appropriation plans, as it's evidently begun to do. Still, some observers are skeptical that the farmers will migrate, let alone to Russia, even if their land is taken from them, though it remains to be seen how they'll react once this policy enters into full swing. Folks, this is a very, very controversial topic, and now that President Trump has tweeted about it, it's become a worldwide issue. So we're going to be very careful in discussing this, but nonetheless, we're not going to pull any punches, and we're going to have some pretty frank discussions. Our first guest in this program is Mr. Brett McDonald. He's a businessman who facilitates trade between South Africa and Russia.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Brett, everyone's familiar with the popular narrative that the white farmers are racist land grabbers, but can you please tell us what arguments the farmers themselves make when defending their land ownership?
What you hear from most of the farmers in South Africa is that they themselves, the generation that are farming right now, weren't the ones who stole the land in the first place. You know, they'll argue that it happened a few generations before them, and they'll also argue that because of the expertise that they've picked up over generations of farming, that they're in the best position to enforce land security or food security in South Africa. But what the government is doing at this stage is that they've merely just put it out as a proposal. They're sitting with a conundrum. When the land was taken originally, during the colonial phase. You know, that land was taken from the indigenous population without any compensation. And after that, laws were passed where no local people were even allowed to own land. So they were prohibited by law, even if they could technically afford the land, they couldn't even buy it. So what's happened now is we had a peaceful revolution in 1994, where you've got a new government and everybody got to keep, you know, all their land. But in the time between 1994 and now, only 3% of land has actually changed hands. So the government is sitting with a conundrum where they're looking to protect the rights of the farmers, and they're also looking to protect the rights of the indigenous community who actually have been robbed over all these years. So right now, this is really just a proposal from the ruling party, the ANC, where they're looking at expropriating land without compensation. But there's a couple of ideas that they are looking at. Like, one of them is to limit land ownership to 12,000 hectares per person, which will only affect maybe 1% of farmers in the country. The other 99% of them will be left alone. The Economic Freedom Fighters, which is another opposition party, are looking at a proposal where they would like to see the state own all the land, like the British model, where people then lease the land on a 99-year lease. So at this stage, this is really a proposal. It has to go to the South African Duma. There they've got to discuss it, they've got to debate it, and they've got to come up with a resolution. And if they want to pass that resolution, it'll need a two-thirds vote within the Duma to be able to sign it into law. So no decisions have been taken, you know, as yet. But that's a conundrum that the Duma really need to resolve.
Okay, well, thank you for clarifying that for us, Brett. Now, if they do happen to resolve this conundrum, and in one way or another, some land is appropriated, what kind of consequences do you foresee this happening, both in terms of the future agricultural productivity of the state and the reaction of international financial markets? Because this issue has now become a lot more important ever since Donald Trump tweeted about it the other day.
It can come down to which model gets adopted. You know, the ANC are looking at that 12,000 hectare limit, which then wouldn't restrict private ownership. The EFF would like the land to be owned by the state, where people then lease the land on a 99-year basis, like in Britain. Now, if one takes that model, the IMF would actually have no reason to have any bad feelings towards it, because quite simply, it would be the same model as is happening in the UK. But as we know, the IMF is a political tool. I mean, if you look at, for example, how the IMF broke their own rules, where they carried on loaning Ukraine money even after it defaulted on their debt to Russia of that $3 billion, you know, it's very clear that the IMF is not a fair player. And with South Africa being a member of BRICS, I think this should be seen more in a geopolitical perspective, where we could probably be targeted by the IMF, but that could be to create economic pressure on South Africa, like is happening in Venezuela, like is happening with Russia and China. You know, any country that wants to break out of the status quo will be a target. And very well, the IMF might decide that this is a handy excuse with which to do what they would have liked to have done anyway. So going forward, I think what's very important for South Africa and the whole BRICS community is really to work as quickly as possible towards the BRICS Bank, you know, all these alternative financial institutions, so that we're not sitting with too much pressure from just the Western financial communities.
Okay, Brett, now the last thing that I want to talk to you about is what I've been reading a lot, and I'm sure you and everyone else has probably read here and there, either on Sputnik, RT, or whatnot, the various reports about some of the white farmers whose land might end up being lost, wanting to flee from the country, perhaps even to Russia. So I want to ask you how realistic of a scenario you think this is, and if it is realistic to some degree, how many of these farmers could even possibly leave? Would we be talking about a large-scale exodus, or just maybe a few dozen people moving out of the country?
You know, again, it will depend on this whole process that has to happen in the Duma. You know, there's two proposals on the table, one being, you know, a limitation of 12,000 hectares, which will affect only 1% of the farmers. So if that proposal gets adopted, then I don't see many leaving. The other proposal is the one where the state owns the land and, you know, they can lease it on a 99-year basis. Well, if they get to lease the land, then I don't see much problem over there either. In fact, one of the biggest problems in South Africa is actually not the land issue, but more the financial issue. It's impossible to buy a farm and then to do something on that farm that can actually generate enough money to pay back the bank. So if, for example, the government was in a position to hand out the land for free, that the person only has to buy the tractors, buy all the implements to use on the farm, and the money for the seed and, you know, the cash flow to bankroll it, then the fact that they don't have to spend the money on the land would actually help the existing farmers, because if they want to expand, they can actually then get land for free from the government. They'd be able to put in an application and say, they'd like to farm cattle or farm with grain or whatever they want to do. And the government would then be able to say, well, you've got so much land that's available and you can see if you can utilize any of it. So I don't potentially see any major problem with either of those two scenarios. But if farmers do want to leave, the ones I know that have gone from South Africa to Russia have often got personal reasons for it. You know, one guy I know is married to a Russian lady. If they do decide to go, the Russian government's proposal where they're making land available very cost-effectively with conditions in Russia with which to farm, you know, I see those as attractions as well. It really just comes down to each country, what can be offered on a sort of like on the ground level, you know, what, mm-hmm. you know, what are the financial terms, what are the conditions over there? And I think that will be done on a case-by-case basis. Personally, I don't see a massive exodus, but, you know, it will really come down to what the Duma decide and how that will affect each and every farmer, you know, how they'll decide what to go, you know, what to do going forward.
Brett, this was a frank discussion about this sensitive issue that clarified a lot of things and also, interestingly, put it all into an international financial context. So thanks a lot for sharing your insight with us. Now we're going to hear what Mr. Kwanele Mkheswa has to say. He's a Johannesburg-based financial consultant and political commentator from Nyaki, southern Zimbabwe. Kwanele is also a regular on Trendstorm.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Kwanele, how sincere do you think President Ramaphosa is in implementing what his supporters portray as economic justice as opposed to simply politicking for votes ahead of next year's election?
Well, in my opinion, I think that this whole land reform thing is really about the election. I think the ANC is losing control of the populace, and it's coming up basically with very similar to what happened in Zimbabwe, you know. They're coming up with a populist policy, a policy that they can use to actually get people on their side for the election next year.
Okay, I see. So I know we've been talking to you for we've had you on a couple different times about South African-related issues, and we've been following the rise of Ramaphosa and the different developments in South Africa. So as you're saying, he might be trying to politic ahead of next year's election. You said there are some domestic political reasons why he might be doing this. Can you elaborate a little bit more about why this move would be seen as politically attractive to some of the voters in South Africa?
Okay. The legacy is always been emotive in South Africa, especially because of the legacy of first colonialism. So it's actually something that is very popular. It evokes a lot of emotions and people, and it allows the ANC to try and regain the narrative in the country. Because the ANC has not been setting the narrative ever since the end of apartheid. What has been happening is that liberal forces, which control the media, and we control the popular culture, are the ones that are taking the narrative. So this is an attempt by the ANC to regain control or to set the narrative in the country. That is what it's really about.
Okay, now if we look at the domestic narrative, there is another gentleman that's he's really making a stand and trying to control that narrative, and he's Julius Malema from the Economic Freedom Fighters, and recently he said that the EFF is in charge, the ANC is following us. So Kwanele, how much influence does this politician have over the state? How competitive of a rival could he be to Ramaphosa, and could he maybe even emerge as a gray cardinal, basically the power behind the throne?
It's unfortunate that Julius Malema is actually, I hope that he doesn't do that himself, but what is really happening is that, like I said, South Africa is controlled by liberal forces, white liberal forces, that managed to set the narrative right from the end of apartheid in 1994. They control the media, they control the popular culture, and they have managed to move the base that controls this country, that controls the narrative in this country. From that of Africanism, Gandhianism, you know, the indigenous philosophies of the Africans, into a liberal, imported philosophy. So basically, the liberal forces have managed to liberalize this country. It's amazing. No one thought it was possible, but it has happened in just 2 decades or 3 decades. South Africa has become a liberal country, and the liberal forces are the ones that are ruling this country. So they are against the ANC, because the ANC is the only force that can really coalesce for one, that is, bring together all the black forces to be against those capitalist liberal forces. So Julius Malema is a de facto member of the ANC himself. So he came from the ANC or came to the ANC and they represent a portion of the ANC that represents the communist ideology, the communist ideology that came through as a result of the alliance that the ANC had with the communist party, Southern Communist Party at that time. So he has actually taken those that position, that radical position, that radical communist position. And if you listen to his speeches and you talk to you, you'll see that his vocabulary is full of communist talk. Talks about the nationalization of now you're talking about the nationalization of the Reserve Bank, etc. etc. All those are ANC policies. They've always been there. So Julius Malema is just a branch of the ANC who is always a privileged information about what is happening in the ANC. So for him to now claim that somehow EFF is leading the ANC in some way, that's not true. What is happening is that the liberal forces have dominated this country and they are controlling everyone now. They're controlling the ANC, they're controlling the EFF, they're controlling everything. That is what is really happening.
Okay, got it. Well, I'd like to ask you somewhat of a personal question, Kwanele, just to wrap everything up. I mean, you're a Zimbabwean living in South Africa, so what's your reaction to the fear that some have of modern-day South Africa being on the brink of becoming like early 2000s Zimbabwe? Do you think these are overblown fear-mongering, or are these legitimate concerns?
Well, the fact of the matter is that what Cyril Ramaphosa is doing and the other members of the ANC team is very irresponsible to one of the because the land reform, the land itself is a very emotional issue. It's very emotional here, it's a very emotional issue, but that is what all the wars that we fought here were about. So this is something that hardens people into corners and it generates negative emotions that cannot die and that will not die over a long period of time. So basically, I don't think that South Africa is a drink. But what I think is that the ANC and Cyril Ramaphosa are being irresponsible. And even the AFF, the AFF is expected to be responsible because the AFF is made up of young people who really don't really know exactly what they're doing. But the ANC cadres, by generating this kind of narrative and by saying this kind of things and by and basically stoking the fire, are sowing seeds that 10 to 20 years down the line, we don't really know how they will explode. That's really the problem. The problem is not next year, but it is what is being said now, the narrative that is being generated now. Within the next 2 decades, 3 decades, what could happen? This could lead to a Zimbabwe-style scenario. Definitely, that is possible, that is very realistic, especially when the economy starts faltering and it fails to provide a job and there is discontent in the country. Anything can happen.
Kwanele, as always, this was a hard-hitting interview about South Africa's controversial land appropriations and the very complex domestic political factors that are driving this decision. So, thanks again for coming on our program.
Trendstorm.
So folks, if we think back on what both Brett and Kwanele shared with us today, of course we can agree this is a very sensitive, emotional, and polarizing issue. But nonetheless, there are some behind-the-scenes forces that are driving this decision. Kwanele drew attention to the fact that there are different opposition forces that are wrangling for control of the government ahead of next year's elections. While Brett very usefully put this into an international financial context by explaining the importance that it can have for BRICS. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.